What's going on? What's going on, everybody? It's Ronnie Francois, your favorite credit hero, the credit guru, and the Credit Lab podcast. Chopping it up again. If you're watching this live, watching a replay, definitely want to say thank you. Definitely appreciate you. Make sure you like, share, and subscribe, because of course you might have perfect credit, but you might be somebody else that might need this information. And on this episode, we're going to cover what is the credit repair process. A lot of people think it's like an overnight process, or you know, you wave a magic wand. And it's further from the truth. So without further ado, we're going to go ahead and get this show started. All right, Ronnie Francois. And the Credit Lab, and the Credit Lab podcast, the number one podcast on the East Coast. And of course, we always have amazing information, life-changing information, but you know, knowledge about, you know, so of course, we give you the knowledge, give you the gems and the jewels, but you still have to go and apply this information that we give you. That's very, very important. You know, this episode of the topic is, what is the credit repair process? Now, a lot of people, you know, probably used to, you know, when you have negative items on your credit report, I mean, some of us, we just kind of ignore it, hoping that the item falls off, hoping that the consumer reporting agency experience using Equifax just feel sorry for us. They just say, you know what, we're going to take this negative item off because this person is a nice person. And, you know, and sometimes the items do fall off after a certain amount of years. But I'm trying to tell you, like, the consumer reporting agencies, they're not your friend. Just because something is past the statute of limitation, or because something is incorrect or it's a negative, and they're not going to take it off because they really don't care. You have to understand, like, they make money by selling information. So the more negative items you have on your credit report, that's how they make their money. So they're not your friend. So don't think just because you're a nice person, they're going to take it off. So the topic is, what is the credit repair process? And then, you know, depending on who you ask, you might get some different answers. But before we dive deep into what's the credit repair process, let's just look into the different ways you can dispute negative item on your credit report. So there's more than one we can skin a cat. The top three that come on top of my head, the first is the Metro 2 compliance. The second is the factual dispute. And the third one is used in consumer law. So we're going to focus mainly on the two main ones, the consumer law and the factual dispute. And those are the different methods that you could use to get negative item off your credit report. And of course, one of the other ways you can actually do it, you can say, hey, please investigate this account. So that is like the basic, the simplest way to dispute negative items is say, reach out to them, say, hey, look, investigate this account and let them do what they do. But if you want a faster result, better result, the factual dispute or using consumer law are one of the two routes to go. So when it comes to the credit repair process, most people just think, hey, you know what? I see something negative in my credit report, something that shouldn't be there, or whatever case might be, or maybe it's past the statute of limitation. I'm going to just reach out to these nice people, Experian Change and Equifax, and tell them, hey, this item shouldn't be on here, or hey, this item passed the statute of limitation. And they're going to take it off because they're very nice people. In the perfect world, that's what would happen. They would just take it off because it's the right thing to do. But then let me take you back to the very beginning of this episode. I told you, they're not your friend. They want you to have bad credit. They want your numbers to suck. They want to push these product to you from these third-party companies. So their incentive is not to fix the issue. And when most people do reach out to them, whether, you know, through mail or by phone, or online, and when it comes to those three ways of doing it, either by mail, online, over the phone, I would always suggest just doing it through the mail. Now, I know you probably say, well, I could probably just call them and just tell them the issue. They would just fix it. No, first of all, you have to understand, like, when you call Experian Change and Equifax, you know, 5 out of 10 times, you're not even getting nobody in the United States. Somebody that's in another country. So this person pick up the phone and you say, you know, you say these items shouldn't be on here. and you start regurgitating, you know, consumer law, like, hey, look, according to 15 U.S.C. 1681B permissible purpose, there's a hard inquiry on my credit report. It should not be there. I didn't give written consent. And that person's going to be like, they're going to give you a whole bunch of mumbo jumbo, give you a whole bunch of run around because they don't know consumer law. So that's one of the things that you're going to come across when you do call. Or you might call somebody, might be somebody in the U.S., and they think they know the law better than you know the law. They're like, yeah, that's the law, but these are the things that we're allowed to do, and which is further from the truth, because Experian Transunion and Equifax do not supersede federal laws. These federal laws were then put in place as checks and balance for these consumer reporting agencies. So when you call them, you're going to get like, you might get a supervisor or somebody that think they know the law. They're going to go back and forth with you. And then the conversation, they're going to just say, look, you know, we're just not doing it just because. So that's why I would not really recommend calling them. You actually have it in front of you that you know for sure that's probably going to work, then that's why I would call them. Because if you call them and you don't know your stuff, they're going to just kind of like laugh at you or just, you know, just put you on hold for like the next 50 minutes. Don't come back on the phone. So I would not recommend calling them. Another one that most people use is they dispute items online. So if you would have asked me like 5 years ago, I'm like, do not ever dispute online. But what I found is, depending on what you're trying to dispute, sometimes it is possible to get results disputing online. Again, 5 years ago, I would have said, no, don't do it. It's the devil. It's bad. It's evil. But after I've done some research, studying myself, I found that disputing online can be effective depending on the item. Now, the only way it can be effective is, again, if you put the right law on the reason you want to dispute it. Because you have to understand, when you dispute stuff online, it might have like 4 or 5 different reasons. And one of those reasons might not be the reason that you're disputing it. So you have to take that into consideration. So you have to select something that you didn't want to select because the only option. And then number two, when you dispute online, before you hit submit, it's like 4 or 5 pages of like fine print information that pulls up. Nobody ever read that stuff. One of the things, you actually give up the right to ask for method of verification. So you actually give up some of your rights when you dispute online. And one of the rights that you give up is the method of verification. So you probably say, like, why is that important? I'll explain that to you. Because so when you dispute negative item on your report, this 7 out of 10 times, it's going to come back verified. So now what you can do is you can say, hey, what is the method of verification? How did you verify? Who did you talk to? How did you come to this conclusion? So when you dispute online, you give up that right. You can't ask what is the method of verification. So that's one of the rights that you give up. So that's why I kind of frown upon doing stuff online. But again, everyone's situation is different. You have to do what works for you. So the third one that I really recommend is doing it, sending it through the mail. Now, there's multiple ways you can send it. You can send a regular mail, and, you know, there's a good chance they're going to get it. Or you can send a certified return receipt where you need to see who signed for it. So you probably say, well, why would I want to spend the extra $3 to $8 so I can get a return receipt when I can spend, like, what, 92 cents for a stamp? I'm about to tell you why. Because this way, in case you ever have to take these puppies to court, you can say, hey, look, you know, this is my first dispute I sent October the 29th. And then, you know, John Paul or Susie Michael or Philip David or Karen Smith signed for it. So they did receive it. And then you're like, hey, look, you know, 45 days later, I sent another one, the second round of dispute, you know, asking for method of verification. You know, Michael Phillip or John Harbaugh signed for this right here. So, again, that's why you want to have that paper trail, because you already know there's a good chance they're not going to do what they're supposed to do. Now you have the paper trail. When you have to take them to court, it's easier for you to win because, of course, you have the evidence where they violated your right. You gave them an opportunity to fix it. They didn't fix it. You're going after the bag. So that's why I would always kind of recommend the mail, because, you know, there's a paper trail. And, you know, and of course, if you spend an extra, you know, $3 to $8, you will get a return receipt. And if you want to take it a step further than that, you can actually get it notarized. Again, you know, why would you want to spend all the extra money? Because, one, there's a good chance they're not going to do what they're supposed to do. B, you have the paper trail. C, taking the court, you have the evidence in front of you. So, again, when you're mailing it out, you got to do what works for you. You know, you can pay that 92 cent. I think a stamp is 92 cent. I think it's been a while, so I don't use stamp. I don't go to the post office like that because I usually send everything certified mail. But so those are the three methods when you send it, when you're disputing. So now we cover that. So now back to what is the process? So in a perfect world, you know, you send something in between, you know, they have up to 30 days to verify, they'll investigate the account, they will look at it, if something's wrong, if it's incorrect, if it shouldn't be there, and they would delete the item. That's how I work in a perfect world. But we all know we don't live in a perfect world, because if we lived in a perfect world, I would have a hairline. So that's it right there. We don't live in a perfect world because I don't have a hairline. So what I'm trying to say is, right, so they're not going to do that when you first send in the dispute. And most people, when they first send a dispute, it's going to come back verified. They get discouraged. They're like, well, you know what? I sent it in. I gave it my best shot. It came back verified. And they kind of just stop. And that's the worst thing to do, because that's what they're banking on. They want you to get discouraged. They want you to stop. They want you to give up. But because you've been watching the Credit Lab podcast for the last, you know, 2.5 years, you've gotten a lot of gems and jewels. So now you know the next step is, after you send that first round, you know, now you want a method of verification. You say, look, this came back verified. Tell me the method of verification. Who did you talk to? And if you look up the Consumer Fair Credit Reporting Act under 15 U.S.C. 1681, it actually tells them what they're supposed to do during an investigation. They're supposed to talk to, like, your neighbors. They're supposed to talk like your associates, your friends. They're supposed to actually talk to people to verify the stuff. But we all know, like, they don't talk to nobody. They don't call nobody. So right there, they're violating your right. So that's why you want to have that paper trail. So when you ask for the method of verification, they're not even going to send you the right stuff. They're going to make it some mungo jumbo, some nonsense. That's what they're going to send you back. And then another thing they might do, too, when you ask for the method of verification, they say, look, we already investigated this account already. Unless you have new information, you know, don't even dispute it. And then you're thinking to yourself, you're like, well, I'm not asking you to dispute it. I'm not asking you to investigate it. I'm asking, what is the method of verification? That's what I'm asking you. So, again, so you send that second round as a method of verification. They send you some garbage, some trash you didn't even ask for, some envelope stuff. Now you got them cornered. Be like, well, you know what? Now I'm going to take you to court. And because you've been watching the Credit Lab podcast, you know that you can sue them up to $1,000 per violation. And you don't have to take my word for it. You can actually look it up. 15 U.S.C. 1681-O is an octopus. 15 U.S.C. 1681-N. Civil liability, or 15 U.S.C. 1681-K. So those are the ones right there that will talk about the $1,000 violation. Came to court, and of course, because you have the paperwork, you have, you know, all the correspondence, how you reached out to them, how they didn't respond back to right now, because you know they have up to 30 days to respond back to you. Just by the way, it's 30 days from the day when they received it, not when you send in their mail. And that's why it's important to have that return receipt. That way you can say, hey, look, I sent it. They received it. It's been over 45 days. Michael Paul or John Peter, Karen Smith signed for it. They, it's been over 30 days. So that's one of the easiest way you can get them, if they take more than 30 days from the time when they got it. So that's why it's important to have that paper trail. So another thing that's important, so when you are starting the dispute process, or you want to know what exactly what to do, the first thing you want to do is you want to pull your credit report. That is the very, very first thing. You have to pull your credit report. Now I know you're probably saying, well, you know, well, Ronnie, I don't have money to pull my credit. I don't want to pay no fees. So I'm about to tell you how you can actually pull your credit for free. Freeannualcreditreport.com. Freeannualcreditreport.com. You actually get a copy, each one of your report, one of them free every single year. So that's one of the easiest way to do it. Or you can use Identity IQ. There's a whole bunch of other ones out there. But if you want a free annualcreditreport.com, that's how you can actually get it. And then so once you pull it, there's a couple of things that you want to do. The very, very first thing you want to do once you pull it, you want to go into the personal information section. So we're about to take a commercial break. Once we come back off this break, we're going to continue the process how to actually look at your credit report before you start a credit repair process.
What is a travel specialist? A travel specialist is your gateway to the world. Our goal is to provide you with a stress-free experience so you can focus on creating memories that last a lifetime. Experience a better way to vacation by trusting a Luxivo Vacations travel specialist to handle all the details for you. Contact Joanne Gaines at 888-227-6607, extension 5447, and start creating your memories today.
What's going on? Welcome back to the Credit Lab Podcast with your favorite credit hero, Ronnie Francois. Again, if you're watching this live, watching a replay, definitely want to say thank you. Thank you. Definitely appreciate it. Because again, you might have amazing credit. You might have 850, you might have 800 credit score, but you might know somebody else that might need this information. So make sure you like, share, and subscribe, follow this network, so that way more people can see this information. So the topic is, what is the credit repair process? You know, most people just think, you know, it's just something that happens overnight. You wave a magic wand. And sometimes it's further from the truth, depending on your credit situation. So before we went on the break, one of the things that we was doing is, it was telling you like the very first thing that you want to do when you do want to start the credit repair process. Because again, yes, you, of course, you can do the credit repair process on your own, or you can hire somebody to do it. But I always say, you know, like a lot of stuff that you can actually do on your own, but you just have to know how to do it. I don't know if that makes sense or not. So that's very, very important. That's very, very important. So it's a little technical difficulty, but we're back. So one of the first things you want is you want to actually pull your credit report, and then you actually want to make sure you analyze it. So you want to look at the personal information section. That's the very, very first part. Because why is that important? You actually want to look at the names, your address, and your phone number, because you should only have one address. You should only have one phone number. Because if you have multiple names, multiple addresses, not only does that look bad to lenders, but actually it just gives a false sense of it gives a false reading to the banks. Because let's just say you go into Chase or Bank of America, right? You're applying for a loan, and you have like 8 names, you got like 10 addresses, you have like 10 phone numbers to them. That could look a little shady, could look a little suspect. So that's why it's very, very important to make sure you only have one name, one address, one phone number on it. And another reason why that's important, let's just say you have a collection from Comcast because you have those cable boxes that you didn't return. So now they took you to collection. Now they sold that account to a collection company. Now the collection company is going to come after you. So that old address that you had, let's just say you update your old address, that old address is not on it no more. So now when you go dispute that negative item, what they're going to do is they're going to try to compare it to your old address, old phone number. So by you deleting the old address, the old phone numbers, that can actually be one of the ways. I don't want to say it's going to stop the dispute process. It's going to matter for the consumer point agencies to verify that a negative account because, you know, it's not connected to the old address. So that's why it's important to actually do that. So again, one of the reasons why you want to clear up that personal information section, because it's going to make it a little bit more difficult for them to verify those old account, those obsolete account, the incorrect account. Because again, they only have 30 days from the day they receive it. So if they can't verify within that 30 days, then they have to take it off. That's very, very important. So again, the first step is to pull your credit report. And if you go to freeannualcreditreport.com, you can actually get it for free. The second thing was once you pull it, you go to personal information section and look at your how many names, how many phone numbers that you have on it. You should only have one name, one address, or a phone number. So one of the ways you can update your personal information, you can actually call the consumer report agencies, or you can actually email that letter in. So now when you do call it, you want to have that report in front of you because you're going to say, hey, look, this is my current address, but these are the ones that I want to take off. You want to say, or when it comes to your phone, if you said, you know, this phone number is not correct. Or let's just say the names is not correct. You say, this is my correct name. these are the names I'm not knowing not my name. So it's important to have that in front of you when you do calling, because sometimes they're going to ask you which one you want to take off. So if you just call experience, you can say, hey, look, my name is Ronnie Francois, so I want to take off all the other ones that's not correct. Sometimes they might do it, and sometimes they might say, look, I need you to be a little more specific when you want to take off. So that's why it's important you want to have that on. Now, once you clear your personal information section, or, but like, let's just say you don't want to call, right, and you want to send the letter, then that's basically you type out the letter, you know, have, you know, the name, the address, where it's going, your name. And in the letter, you say, hey, look, please update my personal information. This is my current name. This is the correct spelling of my name, my current address, my correct date of birth. Please delete these inaccurate information, you know, and you're going to list the information below. So that's one of the ways. Those are the two ways to update it. Either call and have it in front of you and tell them exactly what you want to take off, or B, mail it in. And sometimes you can do them both. You can mail in and then still call, or vice versa. Because sometimes you mail in and then they'll be taking forever. Because remember, they have the 30 days to correct that information. So if you send in, they're taking too long, just give them a call. You know, it might work that way too. Now, the second thing you want to do is you basically want to just go down the credit report and you want to look for anything that's incorrect. Maybe they might charge off collections, you know, late payments, anything that has negative impact that's on it. You want to either circle it or make a note of the item. And then you want to work your way all the way down and you want to look at the hard inquiries. So in a perfect world, you shouldn't have no more than 2 to 3 hard inquiries. And some banks, if you have more than 3 hard inquiries, they're not going to work with you. Because of course, when it comes to hard inquiries, yes, we know they stay on your credit report for 2 years, and we know that they only impact your score for the first 12 months. So that's a good thing. So, you know, after 12 months, they're not impacting your score. But the bad thing is too many hard inquiries is a bad thing, because, you know, for the whole 2 years, they will stay on your credit report. And again, if you have too many of them, banks will deny you credit because they figure, hey, look, you've been shopping around, everybody else turned you down, but we're not going to pick you up. So you want to be careful with the hard inquiries. And I know it is impossible most of the time to get new credit unless you get a hard inquiry. So that's why you do want to be careful when it comes to applying for credit, new line of credit, because too many hard inquiries can be a bad thing. But of course, you can get hard inquiries more too. So the first thing you do is clear up the personal information section. The second thing, go down the list, look for anything that's negative, or this, you know, incorrect, outdated, shouldn't be on it, or it could just be something that's on your credit report that you don't want to be on your credit report. So that's another thing that you have as a consumer. You can actually control what goes on your credit report. I know you probably didn't know that. You probably just think these consumer report agencies can put whatever they want on your credit report, but you do have control what goes on your credit report. So just a side note, when you go to the bank for that mortgage, or when you get in that car loan, there's under the Truth in Lending Act, I'm not familiar with that, also under the Graham-Leach-Bailey Act, 15 U.S.C. 6802, there's a condition. There's 3 conditions that must be met before the financial institution can report that loan, that mortgage, on your consumer report. That's right. You heard it here on the Credit Lab podcast. You go to that dealership, and when you get that mortgage, you get that loan, personal loan, you actually have a right to decide if you want that report on your credit report. I know you never heard that before. Again, that's why I just gave that law. 15 U.S.C. 6802 under the Graham-Leach-Bailey Act, and it's also under the Truth Lending Act. So when you go get that loan, there's 3 conditions that must be met before they can put that on your credit report. And one of the conditions is they have to tell you, hey, look, we're gonna put this on your credit report. And the second condition is before they put it on it, they actually have to give you notice they're going to put it on it. And the third thing is they actually have to give you the option to opt out. So why is it that when you do get that loan, you get that mortgage, we get that car payment, they don't tell you that? Because they know that you don't know. And what happens is the people that know what you don't know, they use that against you because they know that you don't know. But because you have been watching the Credit Podcast, because you've taken notes, you know this information. Now, when you do, you get another car, or you're getting a mortgage, or you co-sign for student loan for one of your kids, or you're getting that personal loan, you have the option to opt out. And then, you know, you can actually study that law yourself because they need your permission before they put down your credit report. So a lot of people don't know that. And if you didn't know that, it's cool. So that's very, very important. That's why you have the power to determine what you want to go on your credit report when it comes to certain stuff. So yeah, I mean, it's really legit. If you don't want someone in your credit report, you can literally decide what goes on your credit report if you don't want on your credit report. So that's the cool thing about consumer law, because you have to understand these laws are put in place to protect you. But I guarantee you, if you call Experian, TransUnion, Equifax, they're going to tell you, hey, look, we have to put this on your credit report. No, you do not have to put it on my credit report. And the Fair Credit Reporting Act is, you know, 15 U.S.C. 1681, it specifically says that the consumer reporting agencies assume the responsibilities of collecting my information. There's no federal law that says they have to collect your information. There's no federal law that says they have to hold your information. They do it on their own. So the next time you call them, Joe, because they say, well, we have to. No, you don't have to. I was listening to Credit Lab podcast last week. In the Fair Credit Reporting Act, 15 U.S.C. 1681, it says that you assume the responsibilities. So take responsibilities, though. And that's why it's important to know these laws. That's why it's important to know your rights. But because, you know, when you was in high school, when you was in college, they didn't teach you this information. You learned about the Pythagorean theorem, photosynthesis. You learned about Mars. You learned about the moon. You dissect the frog. But nothing about credit and financial literacy. But because you always tap into the Credit Lab podcast every Tuesday, now you get this information, you get this knowledge, and that's this information you share with your family, the next door neighbors, the whole community. And now you're a credit hero because you're getting this information. So that's why it's always important to always tap in every Tuesday, 8 p.m. Eastern time for this information. So we do have a couple questions because we do get like a lot of questions. Let me see. We might have enough time for like two questions, but we're going to do as many as we can. And then you can always text me your questions too. 443-738-5529, 443-738-5529. You can always text it in during the show or prior to the show. One of the questions is, how many days before the due date should I pay my credit card? So one of the methods I recommend you use is the 15-3 rule. Basically, 15 days before your payment is due, you'll send half of the payment. So if your payment is $100, you'll send $50. Then 3 days before it's due, 3 business days before it's due, you want to send the other 50. So the reason I say business day, because sometimes, you know, if you make a payment after 5 p.m. on a Friday, it might not get processed to that Monday. Or if you pay a Saturday morning, it might not get done to that Monday morning. So that's why I say 3 business days. So again, when it comes to paying your credit card, the February, it works pretty good. The next question is, one of my son is in high school. I want to help him build positive credit. What's the best way of doing it? Again, the easiest way to help teenagers, high school kids, even college kids, is to add them on as an authorized user on your credit card. So when you're doing that, you want to make sure it's the credit card, first of all, that has the highest limit as far as, you know, credit limit. And number two, your best credit card. Because, you know, adding someone as authorized user can be a double-edged sword. A, anything positive you do is going to help them. B, anything negative you do is actually going to hurt them too. So you definitely want to be careful when you add them on as authorized user, because the good things you do is going to help, and the negative things you do is going to hurt them. So that's why you want to make sure it's the card that has the longest history, that has the highest credit limit, and that is almost a perfect, if not perfect. So that's very, very important when it comes to doing that. And then also, too, it don't necessarily have to be your kids neither. It can be like maybe like your niece, your nephew, you know, somebody, a young person that you're looking at, that's kind of looking up, just trying to build a credit. And sometimes it can be a significant other that's in your house that might have credit issue or that just might need like a little, might need a little help of that serious. Sometimes adding them when it's authorized usually will get them over that hump. Again, thank you. Definitely appreciate you as always. The love and support. Until the next time on the Credit Lab podcast. Thank you.
Make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel at He Said What Network. Follow us on Instagram at He Said What Network. And check out our website, www.hesaidwhatnetwork.com, for our weekly show schedule.